Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Around the Gridiron, Around Campus, Full Press College Football Podcast here on Spitball and Sports. You get it, Mad Radio, Northeast Streaming Sports on the Roku channel. I'm your host, Jim Berenger, back alongside Justin Ryan Gonzalez. Hope you guys enjoyed yesterday's episode. We previewed the national championship game in college football. We're back to break it all down for you here today on a Tuesday night. And we got a new national champion crowned, the Michigan Wolverines. Justin, welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure. And Michigan's the champs this year.
I know. I can't believe it. First time in my college football fandom life that Michigan's the national champion. It doesn't even sound or feel right saying it.
No.
And, you know, we talked about it yesterday a little bit with Aaron. And, you know, it's great that we're going to a 12-team playoff next year, you know. It's needed. You know, like I said, you know, we both lean a little more towards the traditional side, but it's needed because, you know, the fact that I just don't feel as strongly about Michigan as I have some of these other national champions in the past. And I'm really trying to be objective and just put aside my own Michigan bias. And I'm trying to go off the thing that since you and I have met, since the podcast, since I want to say about 7 or 8 years ago, I've gone off the most in my college football fandom, is that stars and recruiting rankings matter. I'm a recruiting rankings nut. I love it. And this Michigan team just doesn't have the composite recruiting rankings that some of the national champions have. They don't have that portfolio and that DNA in terms of recruiting and talent, with blue chip talent and some of the other national champions have. Now, that's kind of impressive. In a way, right? It's a great coaching job by Harbaugh.
It's almost like the Moneyball equivalent to like what the Rays did.
That's not how this game is supposed to go.
No, it's not, right? Like, you know, Georgia, Clemson.
It's been eating me up, Jim.
Justin, you know, you like the Clemsons, the Georgias, the Alabamas, the LSUs, the Ohio States. You're supposed to have the blue chip recruit prospects, but Michigan did it their way. And a guy we talked about, multiple times leading into this game, Donovan Edwards completely MIA the whole year in witness protection, comes out 2 touchdowns for 86 yards in the first quarter. That was the difference in this game. You mentioned Washington's 116th ranked run defense. They played horrible. They didn't play great. And look, they could have stopped them on both. They didn't. Michigan's defense pressured Michael Penix. That's the worst I've seen him play all year.
Yeah, I mean, Donovan Edwards pulled a Sammy the Bull Gravano, you know, out of the witness protection. Here I am years later. Look at me. You know,
yeah.
Wow. And looking back on that game now, knowing what we know now, those two runs really flipped the game. I mean, those were the difference touchdowns in the game to me, at least, because the final score we have is 34-13. You take those two touchdowns off, it's a 20-13 ball game, which for the most large stretch of this game was what that game really was. You know, everyone's getting all caught up in the final score because it kind of fell apart at the end there with the long interception return from Sanistro and the last Blake Corum touchdown. But this was a one touchdown game for a large portion of the game. And I think you said it best, man, in the opening, is that the defense was just the difference. Michigan's defense got to Penix. They didn't make it easy for him. Now, granted, he still had his opportunities.
Oh, 100%.
The touchdown to Roma Dunze is the first one that comes to mind. I felt that that individual play flipped this game more than any completions or touchdowns that transpired. Because the way the momentum was shifting, early Michigan, people are texting me, this is getting out of hand. This is going to be a boat racing, all this stuff. Washington fought back. And if they scored that touchdown right there, I really think that the DNA of former Michigan choking in the past would have kind of surfaced, especially with J.J. McCarthy. But I think that they were able to maintain their lead, which meant they were able to stylistically do what they wanted to do, which was run the ball, rely on their defense, and get up out of there. I mean, late in the fourth quarter, J.J. McCarthy was 8-for-16 for 87 yards. And then he got a long completion to Loveland. That made it look a little bit better, but it's not like he lit it up passing.
No.
And, you know, when you look at the final rushing numbers, you know, everyone's going to fixate on Michigan running for 300. But Donovan Edwards ran for like 100 or 120 on those two or three runs that he had. And outside of that, you know, running with Corum, running with Alex Orgie, the change of pace guy, and running with JJ McCarthy, it's not like, you know, Washington was right there with them. They had their opportunities. I think a couple things that I was thinking about today, Penix was clearly hobbled. Clearly.
Yeah.
He was hurt. You saw him grabbing at body parts. He got hit a bunch of times. I think he took a hit early in the game that maybe messed up something with his ribs. He looked like he was grabbing his ribs a lot. He was doing a lot of this. Clearly, we saw his ankle get rolled up on by a lineman.
Oh,
that
was
clear as day. You know, and I saw people say, oh, you know, that's not a big deal. Like, no, man. If you, you know, if you played sports, I coach football, I coach kids, that hurts, man. Getting your ankle rolled up by another player like that when you're not able to brace yourself for it, that hurts, man. And when he's doing this with, you know, Michigan's defense on the other side, it's not something that's easy. And I think the biggest difference, really, that we saw, and you and I have talked about this kid a lot, we're hiring him, is Dylan Johnson.
Yeah.
He was clearly, you know, they were saying on the telecast he was 70%. I think he was 50%.
He was 50%, if not less than 50%. I mean, he tried. Yeah. I mean, he tried to go out there and play, but he just didn't do it. I agree. I think Penix is off. I mean,
yeah, you respect his effort. You know, he gutted it out. He did what he was supposed to do. But at what point does it become a hindrance to your team? And at what point is Kalen DeBoer, you know, having this guy run in motion, take extra steps, do stuff that, you know what, if you're trying to play this guy with a bum foot, you got to, you know, call dives, call powers, call counters, stuff where he doesn't have to run vertically and laterally and really try to put extra stress on that foot. So I thought, you know, there were some rough coaching decisions regarding that. Also, I don't understand why Washington didn't have, you know, a backup running back or somebody else that they could turn carries to. It was kind of like they were Dylan Johnson or die. Like, they had no backup. And I think that's something that they maybe need to address in the transfer portal or through recruiting, because they clearly need to be able to, now that they're going to the Big Ten permanently, they're going to have to win regular season games and to get into that 12-team playoff. They're going to have to be able to run the ball and not just with one player. I mean, Michigan's a good example. Even though Edwards has been out most of the year, they have four or five guys that run the ball. Blake Corum, him, McCarthy, Orgie. You need guys. You need a committee.
They got back to what Michigan football was all about. Like, there were some years they were trying to be pass happy and trying to run these Pac-12, Big Ten offenses, Big 12 offenses. But they got back to their roots, running the football, just playing good defense, sound structure. You know, somebody made a great point. I forgot where I was watching it. I think it might have been Herb Street or one of the guys on ESPN. They were talking about, you know, the post game. They're talking about, you know, Michigan, Jim Harbaugh changed that defense because they knew they had to beat Ohio State's triple wide receiver threat. Yeah. It was similar. Their defense played like they played Ohio State. You know, they took those guys out, but you said it. You go back to the beginning of the game, that 4th and 7, Roma Dunze is wide open. Like,
that was dead.
Michael Penix, that's a throw Michael Penix makes in his sleep. He overthrew him. He overthrew McMillan on the first drive in the end zone. Like, there were overthrows that Michael Penix Jr. just didn't make this season that he connected on. And he wasn't. The pressure got to him. Yes, he was sacked only once, but he kept feeling that pressure. His arm angles were off. The throws, some of the throws he made were just not clean throws that he would normally make. Yes, hampered by injuries, I get it. But some of the decision making, especially on the two interceptions, throwing into double coverage, just not good. And look, Washington's defense stepped up after those two big scores by Michigan early, kept it a 20-13 game, but they needed stops on third down, especially in the third quarter when J.J. McCarthy was backed up on the two and he runs for that first down. I mean, that was just a drive killer. That was just a killer. They were playing the field position game the whole game, but they just didn't have any answers for that run game.
Another killer was that penalty that they threw on the lineman, 73.
Yeah.
Penix hit Roma Dunze for a 45-yard pass downfield. They were still only down one touchdown at that point. They were moving. They were getting ready to go. They call holding on 73. Now, instead of first down at the 30, it was 2nd and 20. They got backed up. They had to punt back to Michigan, and then Michigan put together a drive and took up some more clock. And they just didn't – I mean,
and let's be honest, that was a weak holding call.
That was a weak holding call, specifically by the standards that the refs were calling that game. That was really weak because they were letting them play for the most part. They were letting them play. And also, the interception on the first play coming out of halftime from Penix was an absolute
can't
killer.
Do that. You can't do that. I mean,
yeah,
because they had just stopped Michigan. They just stopped Michigan from scoring points. They had just got the touchdown. It's a seven score. You're like, okay, they got some momentum. You yep. can put a drive together. You can tie the game. Maybe start getting your offense in sync here. But instead, they throw the ball, gets intercepted. Look, I'm not saying the penalties are the reason they lost. Michigan was the better team. But there were some other examples in that game where Michigan was holding guys a lot worse and no flags were called. But again, it's the national championship. You got to let guys play. But Michael Penix Jr. was just flustered the whole game. They did it to Jalen Milroe. They did it now to Penix Jr. Michigan's defense stepped up when it mattered. They were able to run the ball. Roman Wilson had a decent game. Loveland, the big tight end, pretty much sealed this thing with that big, you know, big catch and run. And they found a way to get it done. Jim Harbaugh was able to coach the game he wanted to coach, and he threw off Kalen DeBoer.
He did. I mean, listen, he definitely outcoached him last night, no question. Last night was not Kalen DeBoer's finest hour. It wasn't Michael Penix's finest hour. And listen, that doesn't put a damper on anything that the two of them did this season. You know, they were 4-8 2 years ago. And, you know, they brought in the two of those guys, and here they are. You know, they had a legitimate opportunity to win the national championship. I saw Kalen DeBoer said that in his post-game press conference. Some people were saying, oh, it's a loser mentality, but no, I totally agree with him because he did have the opportunities, and he knows that they had the opportunities, and he knows that give or take a few plays, they were right there with those guys. And that, you know, for a lack of a better term, to quote the great Dennis Green, you know, the Michigan is who they thought they were. They didn't catch them off guard. You know, they didn't do anything. It didn't seem like Washington was unprepared. It just felt like, you know, they, in key moments, Michigan was able to execute and Washington wasn't. The penalties killed Washington, no question. 73 actually got another penalty after the big holding call that we talked about, too. He had another penalty.
Yeah.
After that, that was another killer when they were down by two touchdowns trying to come back. So, you know, he wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. I think the Dylan Johnson thing absolutely had a major factor. You know, I think if he's 100% and he's running like the way we did, we saw him against Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game, when he's running downhill, getting 7, 8, 9 yards a pop, then last night would have been a different game. But you basically
and then he breaks them after those 7, 9 yard carries. Then a hole opens up and he's gone for a touchdown.
Yeah, and then because of that, Washington had to pass every play.
Yeah,
so Michigan was able to sit back, low back in coverage. Edge rushers were able to pin their ears back and just, you know, go after Penix and give him a rough night. They weren't able to change up or get that back. And again, like I said in the beginning, that's kind of on DeBoer because he's got to either have somebody else on his roster that he's recruited or brought through that he feels comfortable giving carries to in a big game, or he's got to adjust his play calling around that. You can't just drop back and keep trying to do the same thing. They could have maybe, I mean, I granted he was also hurt too. They could have tried to utilize Penix's legs a little more. And maybe they wanted to, but after the ankle got rolled up on, maybe they had to change stuff. You know, only the Washington coaches would really know that. But there were things I felt that they could have done schematically to assist the issues. But I felt like they just kind of tried to, you know, beat them with what we got. You know, this is what we do. This is what we got. Let's try to beat them.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think this is it. We're going out our way. We're going out throwing the football. Again, if Dylan Johnson's 100%, it's a different game. I think they had this guy Nixon, who was the backup, but he really didn't do much.
You could tell they didn't trust him. You could tell they didn't.
No, they didn't. They didn't trust him. They didn't trust him.
And it's tough. They have a great O-line, and they didn't really get to take advantage of utilizing that great O-line. Their O-line won the Joe Moore Award. They were the best O-line in the country. So it's a shame that they didn't get to, you know, get an opportunity to run block and really get downhill like that. And also, I know you brought him up a little bit earlier. Last night wasn't a great night for Herbstreit either. I didn't think he was great. He didn't have that national championship punch. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Fowler and Herbstreit, I think their national championship was the Rose Bowl game. I think they were good there. I thought they called a good game. I mean, they always do call a good game. But yeah, I mean, the problem is it was a slow, methodical change of possession, change of field position game for the longest time. And you could tell it kind of hurts the announcers. They want those big plays. They want the scores. They want
it. It was a weird game.
It was a really weird game because there were so many swings of momentum and roller coasters. You had the early stuff with Michigan. Washington settles in. It's a 20-13 game. Back and forth field position. Couple field goals. Then Washington, then Michigan puts that drive together. They're able to get Blake Corum the one touchdown, the pick, and then he gets the second touchdown to ice it. It was a weird game.
There were a lot of stretches of basically inactivity where it felt like nothing was going down. Like it just felt like they just couldn't. I don't know. The game felt like it never really got into a rhythm. Like yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of punts, a lot of incomplete passes. Definitely wasn't what I was expecting aesthetically. I thought it was a little bit of a cleaner game. I thought you were going to see a little more points. I took the over. You know, that clearly ended up not coming in, along with my Washington money line bet. So 0-2 last night on the final game of the year. Yeah, it's tough.
It was tough. I mean, 4.5 points. I mean, it could.
I was thinking about it. If Adunze, if he gets that touchdown to Adunze, the one that we brought up a couple times, it's 20-20. You know, with a decent amount of time left in that game, I would have felt a lot better hitting the 56, and I would have felt better about Washington getting the over. But
well, it's first time they've given up 300 yards rushing. They gave up the most. I mean, they only gave up 200 yards rushing at all this year. And you know, Michigan did that in the first half. And look, they gave up 303 yards rushing. Again, the 86 yards in the first quarter by Donovan Edwards is really the difference in this game. That's the turning point. If they're able to stop
the first one, Washington played a good defense.
Yeah, they had him blocked up.
They jammed him up. He 99 out of 100 times, that's a tackle in the backfield. Someone's there to clean it up.
Somebody's able to clean it up. Nobody cleaned it up.
Edwards hit the hole, and he's gone. And he's got fresh legs. He's been chilling all year.
Yeah, he was gone. Like he's
probably got
death
a great NIL
arm.
Deal after last season. It was probably had a ton of money just hanging out.
Yeah, he was just hanging out with his money. And look, he was definitely MIA the whole season because it was Blake Corum's team. But look, Jim Harbaugh did a good job coaching this team. They had that us against the world mentality. They played it to perfection.
Yeah, I mean, they did. I mean, you know, and I hated having to see J.J. McCarthy be the national championship winning QB. Just, especially when you stack him up to some of the other QBs that have won national championships in recent years. Joe Burrow, Tua, Trevor Lawrence. It just feels like there's a significant
Sam Bennett.
Gap. Yeah, of course.
Stenson Bennett.
I just feel like there's a significant gap in terms of those guys' ceilings and what they'll eventually be in the NFL. As opposed to J.J. McCarthy. And it's just, I mean, listen, can't take anything away from him. He's 28-1 in his 2 years as a starter, two-time Big Ten champ, 2-0 against Ohio State, national champ. And it's crazy. It still doesn't feel like he proved anything to me.
No, he still didn't do any. I mean, he really didn't have a great.
I still feel like he's got
Well, it was funny there. Because during the game, they're like, oh, J.J. McCarthy's playing really well. And then, like, the next series or the next play, he'd make the errors that we know he sees. He's so
inconsistent. And also during the game, they also made it clear to let us know that J.J. McCarthy brushes his teeth with his left hand. And J.J. McCarthy likes meditation. And J.J. McCarthy and his girlfriend, like, long walks on the – like, dude, it was crazy. I was like, yo,
it was
what?
It was like the J.J. McCarthy show. But look, he did what he had to do for Michigan this year. Michigan, look, they ran the ball 28 times yesterday. Like it was close. It was almost the Penn State game where they ran the ball 32 times. But James Franklin is an awful coach and didn't counteract it. At least Washington was able to.
Don't get my blood boiling on him again. You know how I feel about him. He's got to.
Yeah, I know exactly the same way I feel about James Franklin.
They're not even gonna.
I know they're running it back. They're
not
gonna
contend for the 12-team playoff.
No, exactly. Like crazy. You know, and it's crazy because the speculation is now going to begin about Jim Harbaugh and what he does and where he goes and does he stay? Does he leave? Do they try to run it back? All these guys came back to win the national championship after the bitter taste of last year. A lot of guys are going to translate to the next level. I think he really wants that Super Bowl. We're going to see if he gets it. That's where the speculation is. Where does Jim Harbaugh go?
So from what I understand, a group of Michigan alumni and boosters have put together an NIL collective centered around paying significant money to whoever was a major contributor on this national championship team and trying to get as many of them to return as possible for a repeat. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if, you know, if that's something they want to do. But if Harbaugh comes back, he have an opportunity to repeat for sure. Now, the thing with him in the NFL is I think he's got the right, especially now that he won in college, to be very selective about his next position and what he does next, right? So we talked about it a little bit yesterday. The Chargers, probably the ideal opening for him. But are they going to pay? And are the owners going to give him the leeway to do what he needs to do to win the way he wants to win? Because
that's going
to
be interesting.
The Thanos family, that they haven't been able to execute that. So that's number one. I don't think Harbaugh is enamored with the Raider job. I hate to bring it to Aaron. I don't think that Harbaugh wants that job. There's not a set QB there. You know, there's not, you know, it's not a situation where he could walk in and probably win immediately.
Right.
Right. So then we look at the other openings. Tennessee's open now. Vrabel let go today. Harbaugh is not coaching the Tennessee Titans. Then you have the Washington football team. Maybe that's an intriguing option because they have a, you know, big money owner now. They're willing to spend. They're clearly going to invest in resources. And the owner seems willing to give the coach, you know, a lot of leeway and latitude to do what he wants to do. So I just think that it's going to come down to whether the Washington football team wants Harbaugh or Belichick. Because I think especially with Vrabel open now, they might be able to get Belichick. And that might open up a whole different thing of possibilities.
And think about this one. So I was listening. I saw this today. So you know who the quarterback's coach was when Rich Gannon won MVP, right?
Nah, who was it?
Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, wow.
So we know he can do it on the next level. Will it be the Raiders? I'm not sure. I still think that's Antonio
Pierce. Rich Gannon, what a throwback.
What a throwback. That was the year.
Boy.
That was the year they went to the Super Bowl and lost to Tony Dungy's Bucks. Or John.
Oh, yeah, they had the linemen disappear.
Yeah, that was that was the Bucks, you know.
They had the linemen disappear in Mexico.
Yeah, so that was what it was, Gruden's Bucks team. It was Gruden's Bucks team or Dungy, one of those two guys were there at that time. But you think about it, Arthur Blank down in Atlanta, is that something that he wants to do? We know he can win. We know he can develop quarterbacks. We know he can develop teams. Look what he did with Alex Smith, Kaepernick. Look what he's done with J.J. McCarthy and all these guys.
On paper, the Charger job is perfect. On paper.
On paper, it's perfect. But will they give him autonomy?
There's some factors that we got to consider with that. You know, my gut today would tell me that Harbaugh would be leaving. He's got nothing left to prove in the college game.
Nope.
And quite frankly, I'm ready for him to be out of college football. I'm not the biggest fan of the Harbaugh charade. I don't personally mind him, like his coaching. I just hate the way he incites the media. And it's not even his fault. I think it's more of an indictment on the media than him. But I hate the way the media reacts to him and all that stuff. You know, I think that they just, like, it's crazy. They act like they've never seen a figure in college football before. You know, like, he's like the
first. I mean, we've had Nick Saban for the longest time in college football.
Yeah, man. And we had Urban Meyer growing up. And there's been other legendary
coaches. We got Dabo doing his thing. Jimbo. Yeah, like, you know, Bo Schembechler.
He takes up so much oxygen around the sport of college football. I mean, you can't watch any of these, like, mainstream college football shows, like on Fox, ESPN, anything, without them bringing up at least one segment related to Harbaugh 2-3 times an hour. Like, you know, it's just so – I'm ready for just the whole thing to move on. And it's been that way for a while. You know, he was doing the satellite camp stuff. He was making news around here in Jersey for how he was recruiting here and stuff. So it's a whole history with him. But I'm ready for him to go back to the NFL where, you know, there's more parity around the leagues. There's less emphasis on the top, you know, 5 or 6 teams. Like in college football, we tend to really focus on the top 5, 6, 7 teams, especially in the 14 playoff era, where, you know, in the NFL, I feel like the media hype, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it'll go to a whole other level. I mean, that's what happens nowadays in 2024. But, you know, we'll see. But I think I'm ready for him to make the leap. I think he's ready to make the leap. And my gut tells me today that he will be hired by one of the teams in this NFL cycle. I don't think he's going to wait till next year's cycle.
No, I don't think it's going to be wait till next year's cycle. I think ideally it's the Chargers' job. Does he get autonomy? Does he get autonomy with Chicago? It just feels like he's done. He's accomplished all he's going to accomplish. Chicago's
keeping Eberflus.
So they keep.
I think they came out and gave him a vote of confidence.
All right, so then it's the Chargers' job or it's no job because.
Yeah, I don't think he wants that Raider job, bro.
I don't think he wants the Raider job. I think he's done all he can do at Michigan. There's got to be stuff coming down, unless you know. Again, he's got that contract there, but the AD and the history there and the whole thing about how the Big Ten suspended him and the internal suspension.
I bet you Wade Manuel wishes he never tried to get him to take a pay cut 3 years ago now.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, are they friends? Are they not? He doesn't forget. Look, the way he was talking, he's like last night, he's like, oh, just about the players. Is that we did all this adversity, forget all the off the field stuff. So we know what's coming down the pike. But Michigan, hats off. They played a good game. They played. It was a heck of a season. I mean, again, they really didn't play nobody until the end. Ohio State, Alabama, Washington, because that was their schedule. And I'm not even gonna throw the Penn State game in there because, like, Lane Kiffin and James Franklin just don't show up in big games. So they went undefeated. It's tough to go 15-0. It shouldn't be the norm. The last couple of years we've seen it. We're not going to see it. All right. If it happens, I'll eat crow. But I do not think there will be a 15-0 national champion in the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Listen, I mean, I got to eat crow today too. I picked Washington to win.
So did I.
I thought they were going to win it. So, you know, clearly that's where I was wrong, and I'll eat that. But to your point, I don't think we're going to see that again. I mean, it would take a really dominant kind of team to do that. And the only team I could really think of, you know, in my time watching college football, and I always go back to, it's the best college football team I've ever seen, is the 2019 LSU Tigers. They're the only team I could see doing something like that because they were just able to score whenever they wanted. So, you know, that's different. But even some of these other dominant teams we've seen in the playoff era, like some of the early all Alabama teams, the 2015 Alabama team, 13-0, 14-0, or even the 2020 Alabama team that went undefeated. Like you said, in the new format with the two conferences being as deep as they are, it's going to be really tough to get to those schedules. But now with the 12-team playoff, being undefeated isn't, you know, it's not going to be the end-all be-all. You know, you're going to be able to lose two or three games and, you know, get in.
They'll still have a chance to get in. You got to wonder, you know, if we had a 12-team playoff and this Michigan team went up against Georgia, what would happen?
They would have got destroyed by Georgia. I think they would have got destroyed by Georgia.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think on a neutral site, Georgia would steamroll Michigan. And listen, I was big on here about Georgia not being in, and I still don't believe that they deserve to get in because they lost to Alabama. But objectively speaking, they're definitely better than Michigan. I think they would beat Michigan. Now, I know that's hard to say because they didn't get to that point, but I think anybody that watched both teams play, any odds maker, specifically in Vegas, if you gave this game to them and said, what do you think? Georgia would be at least a touchdown favorite, if not more.
Well, I already saw the odds for next year, and I saw Georgia's already ahead of Michigan to win the national championship, so that's got all you got to tell.
And I'm sure it makes the Michigan fans sick, but Ohio State is too.
Yeah, I know.
And they're like, Ohio State has a better chance of winning than them too with Will Howard.
And we beat that guy already. Well, yeah, but still, I mean, now go do it again. But the problem is no one knows the status of Jim Harbaugh. They moved their spring game back a month. Like normally it's like February or whatever. So you kind of see that the pieces are falling into place that maybe they did what they had to do. They completed their story and that was it for them on Monday night against Washington.
Yeah, and if so, you know, like you said, you tip your hat to them, and, you know, you move on. They finally were able to do it. Like I said, you know, 12-team playoff. Do I think they would have repeated that? No.
No.
I don't think so. I think that with the 12-team playoff, we're probably going to see another All-SEC National Championship game again soon, because the style of play that the SEC does in the regular season is going to translate, I think, to playoff-style football better. And you know, if we see these college playoff games become similar to kind of how NFL-style playoff games are, which I can see happening now, especially with the
clock. Yeah, I can see it.
Then I think those SEC teams are more conditioned to win those games and to win, importantly, three or four of them as opposed to now two.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Physicality is going to be a big component. And like I said, I think, you know, maybe as soon as next year, we might see another all-SEC national championship game.
I mean, I could see it. I could definitely see it for sure. I mean, you know, what a fun year in college football, though. I mean, it sucks that the Pac-12's gone, but they had so many great games this year. The rise of Arizona, you know, Colorado's story at the beginning of the year before everybody knew they were going to tail off. You know, you had Texas and Oklahoma doing their thing, Bama the way they play, Georgia. Like, so many great stories and so many good teams and so many, you know, fun games to watch. It was such one of the better college football seasons out there.
Yeah, this was one of the more enjoyable seasons I've had in recent years, for sure. You know, this was the first year I didn't coach in a while, so I was home all day on Saturdays. And that was part of the reason, was I wanted to, you know, be able to watch my full day of college football games like I had in the past previously before I was, you know, getting some big games cut out, and I didn't like that. You know, the weather outside today here in lovely New Jersey is very indicative of how I feel with college football ending today. It's all rainy and cloudy and sad, man.
A lot of uncertainty in the future.
A lot of uncertainty in the future, for sure. And I think, you know, my biggest thing with this season, as great as it was, and I've said this a couple of times on here, there wasn't that huge upset that makes, you know, the seasons what they are. You know, the number one, number two, number three team didn't lose a game in November, and Armageddon didn't set it. And the reason why that upset me is because this is the last year where those massive upsets like that are really going to be able to derail something. And listen, some people might be like, hey, that's good. You know, losing the fluke game shouldn't derail your season. And there's some merit to that, for sure. But also, you know, I think back to the gold standard that I compare every college football season to, which is the wacky 2007 season, where the number one and number two team lost six straight years. That was Armageddon. We saw USF be the number two team in the country that year, University of South Florida.
I remember that. Rutgers got pretty high up in that state on those rankings.
Yeah,
too.
And then
they lost to either, like, I think it was either Cincinnati or West Virginia.
They lost to Cincinnati. They got destroyed by Cincinnati.
Yeah, because they beat Louisville on like
in
a Thursday night.
The old Big East.
Yeah, the old Big East.
Yeah, they had beat Louisville with Brian Brown when Louisville was number one in the country. Louisville was one in the country.
Right, and then Rutgers jumped up into the top 10 and they got knocked out.
And that I always think of Pat White, Noel Devine, and Steve Slayton at West Virginia. They went into the backyard brawl, winning in, and lost to Pitt, who wasn't bowl eligible, 13-9. And they lit it up all year. And, you know, it's those kind of upsets and stuff that, you know, make college football the lore that it has. And we just didn't have that this year. I think of the year Boise State in 2011, where all they had to do was beat the Colin Kaepernick-led Nevada team the day after Thanksgiving, and they would have played in the national championship game. They would have been the first group of five school to ever make the BCS national title game, and they blew it. They lost at home. You know, those upsets were killers.
And those upsets mattered and made the regular season games so much more important.
It did. I could still see Pat White walking off the field, like holding his helmet, looking like he was just like beyond devastated. And that component of this season, that whole drama, didn't really come. We knew who the main teams were going to be and that they were going to be playing each other at the end of the year, and it never felt like any of these teams were in danger of being upset. So, you know, that's just my one gripe with this season. But listen, other than that, like you said, storylines, exceptional. We had great storylines all around. The football was very high quality. We had a lot of exciting games. The game of the year was the Washington-Oregon first game.
Was that like October, right?
Yup. And even though it was week one, the Colorado TCU game is up there too. That was a dramatic.
That was a fun game because no one really knew what to expect from Colorado. Shador Sanders balled out. Travis Hunter had the game of his life going both ways.
Was awesome. So that was this season was great because of all those things. And a lot of great stuff happened this college football season for sure. But like I said, this is that lack of like a big upset. Really, really kind of got to me. I would have liked a big somebody, preferably Michigan. It would have been great if Michigan got upset and knocked them out of the playoff run at some point.
But I mean, look, LSU was on the ropes by Missouri. They figured out a way to get in. Shout out to Missouri for having an excellent season this year.
Eli Drinkwitz.
I mean, you know, Ole Miss had another fantastic season under Lane Kiffin. They had a chance to knock Alabama out. They didn't do it. I mean, like you said, the upset wasn't there, but there have been a lot of phenomenal games this year, and it's been an awesome college football season, and it's sad to see like a place like the Pac-12 just disappear because
Arizona
on the rise. Washington State was good. Utah was good. Oregon State, like, you had all these good teams, and now they're just spread out, and it's a shame.
It just sucks that Washington didn't go on this run 2 years ago, because if they would have got on this run 2 years ago, the Pac-12 would have had so much more negotiating leverage at the table, but they just went so long without playing an impactful game that really mattered on the national rankings. I mean, it had been 8 years, legitimately, since a Pac-12 team had played a true competitive playoff game that mattered, you know, and it just can't happen. I really put the blame on specifically just football-wise, not talking the administration stuff, the business stuff, the TV side. Just football-wise, though, specifically USC and Oregon, because at some point in the last 8 years, if one of those two schools, which we've seen in the past, go on a national championship run, could have at least gone to the national championship game. I'm not saying they have to win it, but could have at least done something to generate buzz and excitement and have the country view the Pac-12 as a winning conference. Because it became a punchline, man. It became something that, you know, I was getting made fun of. Like, oh, why do you watch the Pac-12? Pac-12 After Dark, what is that?
Yo, Pac-12 After Dark. No one cares about Pac-12 After Dark.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's crazy to me, man, because some of my most enjoyable football fan moments as a fan have been in Pac-12 After Dark games. I always tell people, I think I've watched more Dorian Thompson Robinson than anybody outside of UCLA fans, because he was always on Pac-12 After Dark. And he started as a freshman and played all 4 years. So he was on there, year after year. And, you know, these Pac-12 After Dark, at least to me individually, they became like characters in my life, man. You know, so
I mean, they were fun games to watch because you didn't know, because sometimes you'd say, oh, USC's going into Washington or Washington State. They have a chance. They'd be like one of those seasons where they could have gone undefeated and maybe had a chance at a national title. They get upset by Washington State late.
Like, it just sucks that
it's gone.
I hope that they figure out a way, scheduling-wise, to at least make sure that they're still, you know, 10 o'clock East Coast kickoffs, you know, for people that want to watch them. You know, kick those games off at 7 o'clock your time and, you know, give me my After Dark games, because if you're going to take the conference from me, at least still give me access to watch those games. And I want it to be the teams that I've watched. You know, in the new Big Ten. I don't want to watch the new Mountain West Pac-12 teams. I don't want to watch San Jose State and San Diego State play Oregon State and Washington State. I want to watch my Washington-Oregon matchups. I want to watch these games. Put them in 7 o'clock their time, 10 o'clock here, please. That's my one request to the TV providers. You know, they did it with the Pac-12 games when they moved them to 9 a.m. West Coast time.
Yeah, they put them at 12 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, which is crazy. As a coach, that's crazy to me that they ever did that to the players. But it happened. So, you know, they have to be mindful of that stuff. And it's going to be a whole new world next season, bro. It's a whole new world. It's going to be, you know, all adjustments, getting used to this, getting used to the schedule, getting used to the conference matchups. The early indications is that the schedule is going to be great. I mean, we're going to have some great matchups. We're going to get a rematch of this Washington-Michigan game for sure. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm excited for the 12-team playoff. I'm excited for the playoff games on campus. Everything outside of that I'm leery about. So we'll
see. Yeah, me too.
We'll see how it goes. But like you said, man, this season, it was tremendous. You know, if this was the last year of the iteration and structure that we've come to know and love, I'm okay with how it went out. I would have liked my upset. But I would have liked a different national championship than Michigan. But look, for the sport itself, which I care about more so than my own personal biases, somebody else winning was good for the sport. It's good for the storyline. It's better than if we saw another Georgia or another Alabama championship, even though it's Michigan, even though we don't like them. It's good for the sport.
It is good for the sport. And what a way for the 14 playoff to go out. You get the right teams. You get some exciting games in the semifinals. Get a decent national championship game. It's good for the sport that a team like that wins a national title now. Yeah, I know what people get tired of the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Clemsons and the SEC dominating everything. The problem is it's going to be the Big Ten and the SEC dominating everything anyway in the new 12-team playoff. But I'm excited to the season to see maybe some of these games do matter. Maybe these conference championships games have more meaning now with these byes, these playoff games on campus. There's going to be so much stuff to dissect next season. It's going to be great. The end of this season, it's been a great run for college football, the way it's done. The season's over. Can't believe it.
And shout out to the 14 playoff for overstaying its welcome by about 10 years. It lasted 10 years.
And 10 years.
For it to go the first year it was there. Shout out to the 14 playoff for pissing off people for 10 years straight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And shout out to the 14 playoff, you know, for just making the narrative of this game completely out of proportion, for ending up in the Supreme Court, for all the dramatic stuff that has come from the 14 playoff. I mean, what other sport do we have where people take it to the Supreme Court, man?
Only college football, because controversy
drove people mad. This 14
playoff drove people mad. It's the entertainment. It's the 14 playoff. Who gets in? Deserving, best. It doesn't matter. It was just, it creates controversy. It's made for entertainment. It's the entertainment playoff. Now we're going to kind of have a true playoff because you're going to have the best 12 teams. And what you got to hope for next season is that you have at least 7 or 8 teams like you had this season in contention going into that 12-team playoff.
Absolutely, man. And listen, hopefully, best case scenario, there's more. But at the end of the day, there's only so many recruits to go around. And I don't care that Michigan won. The stars still matter. Your recruiting score will always matter to Ari Wasserman. It will always matter to me. And that's it. And I care about the recruiting score. And I think that, you know, if we look back on this in 5 years, this will be considered an anomaly. I don't think it's the new norm. I think that, you know, next year you'll see the national championship reflect a truer overall composite ranking, especially if Harbaugh leaves, because his developmental ability is second to none. We've seen that over and over again. There's countless examples. Like you mentioned before, he developed Rich Gannon when the guy was 36. So, you know, you could see, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But I think that the composite rankings will kind of get back in line. And with the 12-team playoff, I think we'll see the more talented teams be able to last the 4 weeks. I think we'll see less of the, you know, fluky stuff. I don't think a Cinderella team's going 4 weeks in the college football playoff.
No, I don't think so. Cinderella ain't going to make it. They may make it 1 week. They ain't making it 4 weeks. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but the college football season's in the books. Michigan's the national champion. This has been Around Campus, Around Gridiron, the Full Press College Football Podcast here on Spitball and Sports, Mad Radio, and Northeast Streaming Sports on the Roku channel. I've been Jim Berenger, your host, alongside Justin Ryan Gonzalez. Guys, get it iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you again real soon. Take care.